It's the purple pants. It's the purple pants. It's the purple pants podcast. You better get your headphones and listen up quick. Ooh. It's the purple pants podcast. You better listen in public, might make your stomach hurt. Ooh. It's the purple pants podcast. You're trying to unwind. You better get that box wine. It's the purple pants podcast. You're trying to get your snack. You better hurry right back though. It's the purple pants. It's the purple pants. Hello, hello, and welcome to the Purple Pants Podcast, episode 225, Lens Who's Band. I serve as your humble and also gracious host, Bryce Isaiah, and I thank you so much for tuning in to this week's brand new Purple Pants Podcast. If you could be so kind to ensure that you are subscribed to the Purple Pants Podcast, we are available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, anywhere that podcasts are available. The Purple Pants Podcast awaits for you to subscribe. Write a review and give your baby boy some 5 stars. How is everyone doing? Whoo! Purple Pants Posse, I have my PTO schedule for Monday because I just knew I was going to be running down Broad Street screaming E-A-G-L-E-S Eagles! But baby, get my behind in the house. The Eagles did not win the Super Bowl. You know, Philadelphia was a little upset. But listen, win or lose, we stand by our birds and we always bleed green all year around. So it was a great game. The Super Bowl halftime performance. I mean, should we get into it? Y'all want to chit chat? I thought the performance was really great. I thought it was visually very I was like, oh, is she up? Is she down? Is she up? Is she down? Now, I didn't really notice the baby bump until maybe about the third song. Somebody texted me and was like, she's definitely pregnant. And then I could not watch anything else but that baby bump. So congratulations to Rihanna. She is expecting her second child. And yeah, I thought the Super Bowl performance was cute. It's kind of sort of what I expected from Riri. So I enjoyed it. She got hit after hit after hit after hit. So, I mean, to anybody else, your opinion is your opinion. But I thought that, first of all, for her to be pregnant and still killed, listen, I thought the Super Bowl was aesthetically great. And Rihanna did her thing. So, you know, that was really it for me. I wasn't really doing too much because I said, all right, if we up going in to the fourth quarter, I'm putting on my clothes and I was going to be headed downtown because I wanted to just, you know, celebrate. But, you know, we got to that fourth quarter. Baby boy got back into that bed. But overall, it was a really great weekend. I hope that everyone is doing well. We've got a great episode for you. But wait. Before we get into all of that, this episode comes out February 14th. And I just want to say happy Valentine's Day to the Purple Pants Posse. And if you don't have a Valentine, like I don't have a Valentine, then guess what? We are Valentines. So you don't have to worry about being Valentine-less this season because I am yours and you are mine and we go together and I'm sending you abundance of love. And just know that this day is a special day and love on yourself, okay? Get yourself some chocolates. First of all, we don't even need chocolate. Buy yourself some jewelry. Buy yourself that shirt you've been saying got in the cart, but I ain't gonna get it yet, okay? Go online and get them jeans that you wanted, them sneakers that you've been looking at. Go ahead and purchase them. Love on yourself and send some love to yourself. And I also encourage you to reach out to somebody and say happy Valentine's Day to them as well. You know, spread the love, okay? Because, you know, we all need some love. And so I don't need to have a Valentine because I got my Purple Pants Posse. But I am really excited for this week's episode. It's giving back to the basics, back to the roots, okay? Back to what the Purple Pants Podcast used to be founded on. So I'm really excited for this week's episode. We got the church announcements. And on the menu this week, you know, your baby boy talks to the posse. I give you guys some shows that I've been watching over the last couple of months. And, you know, I just talk to the posse. So I'm talking about the Miss Cleo documentary on HBO Max. I'm talking about Bling Empire on Netflix. We are talking The Summer I Turned Pretty on Amazon. So listen, you definitely don't want to miss out on me giving you some tea on some good shows that if you're not watching, you should already watch. And then we get an advice with Bryce this week. And I just have to say, this advice with Bryce kind of touched me and got your baby boy a little emotional, got me thinking. And, you know, I reveal, you know, some personal things about myself because, listen, here on the Purple Pants Posse, we go together and it's a safe space. And then we got the freak of the week. So, listen, we got a really fun episode for y'all. So, listen, let's get into these church announcements. And we are back with this week's church announcements. You know, your baby boys are heading on the road for the Bryce and Wynn Tour 44 for the Survivor season of Survivor 44. And listen, we are headed to 8 different stops along the way, and we are just really so excited. Baby, when I tell you, me and Wendell be behind the scenes cooking up and working up so much stuff to make these parties amazing. Let me just say, Toronto, make some noise, because what we have in store for you is truly amazing. And listen, Los Angeles, Seattle, Atlanta, Pittsburgh, Boston, Philadelphia, and New York, baby, buckle up, because your baby boys are coming. And listen, we bringing that heat and the smoke. And listen, I don't know if y'all know, okay? We working so hard on this show, we didn't even have to drop a theme song. I had to get back into my bag. So if you have not already, head over there to wherever it is that you download or listen to music. Bryce Isaiah featuring Win Deezy, Tour 44. Bryce and Win or the Tour 44. Okay, listen. Learn the words. Because listen, when we're in your city, you listen. I might have to perform, but truly, I really feel like this tour is going to be so magical. And I'm stressing out, because you know me, we got to get this, we got to do that, we got to do that. But listen, it's going to be so amazing. Tickets are available. You can click the link in my Instagram, or you can click the link at Bryce and Wynn Presents on Instagram. And we will see you very, very soon. Survivor is right around the corner.
It's a man who, it's a man you. Meat and potatoes like we cooking up a great stew. It's a man who, it's a man you. Meat and potatoes like we cooking up a great stew.
What is going on, Posse? It is your baby boy. And I feel like we haven't had one of these, you know, chats in such a long time. It's kind of sort of the inception of the Purple Pants podcast. We used to have these conversations all the time. So guess what? Your baby boy is back. I really felt like since maybe November, December, January, and now we're in February, I haven't really been giving you guys an update on the shows that I've been watching or some gems that I have discovered. So I was like, you know what? Let me talk to the Posse and tell them some of the shows that I like, and even documentaries. So I really want to start off with talking about the Miss Cleo documentary on HBO Max. It's called Call Me Miss Cleo. Now, I'm sure you guys remember from the late 90s and early 2000s. Y'all know I was still a toddler. I could barely talk or walk then, but I could remember calling me now to Miss Cleo. Like, I mean, it is a pop culture phenomenon. Miss Cleo, she used to be on the TV. You would see the infomercials. Infomercials. Okay, that's what we're going to say, because, child, I was saying infomercials. But anyway, y'all remember those infomercials where she would be on there talking about, it's Miss Cleo, call me now. Now, don't tell Barb this, but I did call one of the psychic hotlines before. But I don't even think I ever got anybody. But I just, you know, I saw this documentary and I watched this back in December, and I kind of sort of knew a little bit about what had happened. I think the thing that I remember prior to watching this documentary was the Miss Cleo Call Me Now. I remember there was a lawsuit and I remember them coming out and basically saying that she was like a fake and a con artist. And that's really the last of Miss Cleo that I remembered. So when I saw this documentary coming up on my screen, you know how sometimes it'd be like a Saturday, Friday, maybe even a Wednesday night, you looking for something to watch and you got to scroll through something until something like, you know, precious spirit. And you know, it could maybe not press your spirit that day, but the next time you go and see, you'd be like, you know what, let me see what they're talking about in this. That's really how the documentary got me. And this is what I will say before I give my review and give y'all the tea on what is in the review, is that like, the feeling of what I felt that I knew or thought of the Miss Cleo situation going into it, baby, was completely different than how I felt leaving the documentary. I felt leaving the documentary with compassion, sadness, and just overall, like, I felt really bad for Miss Cleo. So listen, the documentary really kind of just highlights who Miss Cleo was. And of course, we all know that really wasn't her real name. And so the documentary don't hide a lot of stuff because there was some shady stuff that went down. Okay, Miss Cleo was not from Jamaica. She appropriated the Jamaican accent, but like she took it on as her own. So she wasn't from Jamaica, but she kind of like took it on as her own. Her name is not Miss Cleo. It was Yori Del Harris. She had a lot of aliases. She was a theater major. Go figure, right? So she loved performing arts, acting, all of this stuff. Later on in life, she took on this, you know, Jamaican accent and became this self-proclaimed voodoo priestess. And my knowledge of Miss Cleo, again, prior to watching the documentary, just what I remember of it was that, like, you know, it was fake. And I really feel like the documentary did a great job of, okay, she don't have a Jamaican accent. We know her real name. To our understanding, she wasn't really a voodoo priestess, self-proclaimed. However, she really did have a gift. And I think that the documentary really did a good job of throughout the documentary of really kind of, they interviewed people that knew her. And it was like the interviews of the people that really knew her and some of their testimony that would say that, like, you know, when she would give me a reading or when she would talk to me, it was almost as if, like, you know, she knew who I was. And so it really early on in the documentary, Miss Cleo, they make it seem like she was kind of sort of money hungry. She would go with work with these like play productions, get the coin and then be out. And so she stumbled upon this job as a, you know, online psychic. And the company that she was working with saw her as like really a valuable asset. They wanted to film an infomercial. They wanted to film a commercial. And so they used Miss Cleo because she really had a personality. She was charming. She was fast-witted. And boom, they did a commercial. And instantaneously, they really saw how compelling and how people gravitated to her. So they started using her more and 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 more. Like, and to the point where, you know, we all know it. It's Miss Cleo calling me now. And, you know, I just seeing some of the info. Y'all, now, okay, listen. See some of the commercials that they were playing in the documentary. I don't remember seeing these long-formed commercials. Like, I just remember seeing, like, the short little clips. But they would, like, show you these long clips of her. And, you know, somebody would be like, hey, Miss Cleo, what's going on, darling? And then they'd be like, I just don't know about my boyfriend. And Miss Cleo would be like, I'm getting the senses. The cars are telling me, like, you know, and it was these, like, I was like really interested in it. And so it was almost as if like the commercials were like a TV show. Also, she was so popular that like she would be going on talk show. Like, again, we didn't have the internet. We didn't have, well, we did have the internet, but you know, we didn't have no shade room. We didn't have TMZ. We didn't have all of these things to keep up with Miss Cleo to know like she was really like on daytime TV shows, on radios. And so people are thinking that like she is this, you know, famous woman and She's making all of this money. But listen, so then the issue comes, and I don't know if any of you guys follow the Real Housewives of Salt Lake City with Jen Shah, and you know that scam that she is in. It kind of is similar to Miss Cleo. Also, really important to know that Miss Cleo did not own the rights to, like, her voice, to the name. Maybe she did own the rights to the name, but, like, all of the commercials, I was about to say, infomercials, Mercers. I don't. I can't. Hey Siri, how do you say info Mercers? Okay. I don't know why I just cannot say this. Anyway, she really didn't own the rights to the imaging or anything. So this company could do what they want with them. And that's why we saw it all over the place. So, you know, you would see Miss Cleo and you'd be thinking like, oh, she's making so much money, but really she wasn't. And so the documentary goes on to show us that these psychics that people were calling, basically it was just a call center. Anybody could go up there and get a job and just sit on the phone. And they basically would try to tell you to keep them on the phone. Because if y'all remember back in the day, it used to be like your first 3 minutes are free. And after that, it would jump up to like $4.99 a minute. So people would be talking to these supposed psychics, but they weren't really psychics. And they would try to just keep them on the phone. And then these people would have like these $2,000, $3,000 phone bills. And people started complaining until they really launched an investigation into the company and people filed a lawsuit. And in the lawsuit, they filed it against the company and Miss Cleo. And that's the lawsuit that we all kind of know of with Miss Cleo. And so what was just really shady was that the company tried to like say they ain't do anything wrong. Okay, first of all, y'all know, these people aren't psychics. You're raising these prices. You're getting people to pay these bills. Like, you know, it just really was a scam. And Miss Cleo got caught up in it because she was the face of the company. And it's like more people talk about Miss Cleo than they talk about the actual company. And she really did not have any stake in the company. She didn't get any percentage off of anything. Like, she just was kind of sort of living paycheck to paycheck. And that was the crazy thing about the whole documentary for me, was that, like, wow, it really wasn't Miss Cleo at all. It was this company. And when you watch the documentary and you see all of the little things that the company did, it's just crazy. And so later in the lawsuit, they dropped Miss Cleo from the lawsuit because they realized it really wasn't her. She was essentially getting paid to do a commercial, and then that was it. And then the company would just blast it. And so after that is the really interesting part for me, is that Miss Cleo went into a depression, and we hear from her friends that knew her during this time. And essentially, like, Miss Cleo wouldn't leave the house, and she would just be inside. And so this is where I think the empathy comes in for me, is that you hear her friends talk about how lively, how colorful, how amazing she was, how much she cared. Another point to go back to is that just like with the Real Housewives of Salt Lake City with the Jen Shah scam, like the people that they were scamming, of course, like they targeted elderly people. They targeted a certain type of demographic that would, you know, be interested in the Miss Cleo thing. And so when you hear the stories of the people that, you know, took financial losses from this company, it truly is sad. However, you know, on Miss Cleo's side of it, it's like, if you an actor and you get paid to shoot a commercial, whether it's real or not, you know, you get paid and then you go about your business. And so Miss Cleo really took a hit. Like, the company, I don't really think, you know, because what's the name of the company? Who knows? Who runs the company? Who knows? Like, you know, all you know is Miss Cleo because they put her as the face of it. And so when you watch the documentary and you listen to her friends and just say how her spirit was so down, and also they really say she was gifted. And they really say that she had a knack for, like, you know, being able to meet someone and be able to tell them their life stories. And I know plenty of people like that. And so it's like, you know, she really did have a gift. Then later on in life. They say she kind of got her zhuzh back, and they said that, you know, Miss Cleo was always in a supporter and an advocate of different causes. You know, people, they would call her to support a cause and she would show up. She was huge with the LGBTQ plus community. She would go to the gay pride parades. Like, you know, Miss Cleo was out there doing her thing. And her friends in this documentary would tell us that she really got a lot of joy out of that. She really kind of felt as though like she was using her purpose in something good. Then what I did not know is that Miss Cleo was a part of the LGBTQ plus community. Like, she was family. We meet one of her partners. And again, it was just like so much of this one-dimensional person that this documentary does a really good job of showing us who she was. And it just really is sad because Miss Cleo, in the end, died of colon cancer. And just listening to her friends talk about her, how like she never really recovered from the situation, you know, her being a queer person, her being a Black woman, I just really walked away from this documentary feeling like Miss Cleo really got the short end of the stick. She started off loving theater. You know, she got into, you know, tarot cards. She got into this thing. Like, you know, people criticize her for, you know, appropriating this Jamaican accent. But her friends that knew her, again, later in her life, said that, like, you know, she only, like, I don't know how to explain it, but I feel like, I want to say, like, now this might be a bad example of it, but maybe you can get the drift of what I'm trying to say, is that, like, you know, back in the day, if you're a Beyonce fan, you know how she did like Beyonce versus Sasha Fierce, and Beyonce would do interviews and basically say that Sasha Fierce is her stage persona, and that Sasha Fierce is more confident, she's more this, she's more that. And when, you know, Beyonce is on the stage, she really becomes Sasha Fierce. But when she's home, she's like Beyonce, who's more quiet. Like, I really felt like that was the case with Miss Cleo, where I don't think that she was I think that the Jamaican accent, the priestess, really became a part of who she was. And she clearly had a gift. She clearly had a light. And this whole thing that rose her to fame, that people thought she was making all of this money when she really wasn't. And then it's like the company used and used and used and used and used and used and used this Black woman until they couldn't. And they just dropped her like a bad habit. She was left with this horrible reputation, and her spirit is down in the gutter because people are thinking all of these negative things of her, thinking that it's actually her. Her just, you know, with her own sexuality, her being a Black woman, it really made me look at Miss Cleo in a way that I just never looked at her. And just, it just really made me sad watching the documentary. Just like, wow, like this really talented Black woman who really meant for good, despite, you know, her beginnings and what you might say, whatever. But like, you know, we all have a past. And so I don't know. I just really thought the documentary was so compelling. So if you get a chance, a second, a moment, it's not that long. It's like an hour and 30 minutes on HBO Max. Miss Cleo, Call Me Now documentary. It is so good. And especially if you have like any remembrance, which I'm sure you do, of like the Miss Cleo documentaries. And it's just, it really, I've been telling everybody to watch it. I've been telling, like, y'all need to watch it. It's so good. Okay. The next show I wanted to tell y'all about was Bling Empire NYC. Now, y'all know I talked about Bling Empire, just the regular Bling Empire over there in LA when it first came out. And I talked about season 2 as well. I love Bling Empire. It is a reality show based around wealthy Asian American people. And I, you know, I'm all here for the diversity. So I love and live for Bling Empire. I think that it's like, you know, who doesn't love to watch rich people? And so it's just a really fun Netflix show, and they're like 30 minutes. So it's a really easy watch. And so I've watched all 3 seasons of Bling Empire, and you know, I got my ways of who I feel and like, you know, all of this stuff. You know, there's Kane, there's Anna. And so on the last season of Bling Empire, there was noticeably missing Anna at the, you know, the last dinner that they did, if you watched it. And so then after their dinner, they go like, where's Anna? Where's Anna? Where's Anna? And so they tease that Anna is going to be in New York. And then they show us this trailer for Bling Empire NYC. Now, I forgot that it was coming out. And so I watched this back in January, but and I kept meaning to podcast about it. But, you know, your baby boy got all these jobs, got working, you know, so I never got a chance to talk to the posse about it. So, again, if you like reality shows like The Housewives, The Kardashians, Basketball Wives, Below the Deck, all of that stuff, you will love Bling Empire. So I don't know if you remember Bling Empire, might have been season 2. Kane was trying to be friends with this girl, Dorothy, and Dorothy ain't want nothing to do with Kane. And then Dorothy was living in LA. Then she moved to New York. Dorothy is the main character in this reality series that it seems like everyone centers around her. Now, Kane back in the day made some accusations that, you know, Dorothy was a mean girl, all of this stuff. And so I kind of feel like some of the stuff that Kane might have been saying might have been true. However, I do feel like Dorothy has a really good heart. Her best friend, Tina, is on there and she is in the fashion industry. And she's just like so amazing. And then she has a group of friends. And that, listen, I love this. Okay. Tina and her group of like fashion industry friends, they call themselves the Salesians. Okay. And I love it because it's, and even like People Magazine wrote an article about the term Salesians. And it was really about how Asian people, they came together for this bond of fashion, and they all kind of, first of all, and they all know how to throw it on and style themselves, but really about like how it felt being othered and how fashion brought them together. And it's kind of like their own, their, it's their family. And so like, listen, they love to be the Slasian. Oh, listen. Okay. First of all, I want to be a Slasian. Okay. Cause they be killing it. But the thing that I find that Netflix, they're a little shady for this season of Bling Empire NYC. Now, for the regular Bling Empire, right? We've got Christine, who is married to Dr. Chu, and they are wealthy, wealthy, wealthy. We have Anna. We've got Kane, who comes from a rich family. We've got Kim Lee, who is a successful DJ, kind of turn model. There's Kelly, who's an entrepreneur. There's, you know, and the only person that's on the regular cast of Bling Empire, who they try to make seem like he doesn't have money, is Kevin. But we love Kevin. Even though I looked up Kevin's net worth, it's like $2 million. But, you know, to $400 million, I guess that's a little change. Now, the shade that I find so funny on New York Bling Empire is that when we first start meeting a lot of the different characters, I shouldn't say characters. Like, I hate what I call people characters on reality TV shows. Like, no. When we first start meeting the people, right? For instance, we meet Dorothy, and in the first screen, it says Dorothy, and it says, like, you know, her family's wealth is like $4 billion, okay? $4 billion. Then we meet my girl, Deborah Hung, and her husband, Stephen Hung, and they're worth, in, I think it's like in the billions, it might be $1 or $2 billion as well. Now, this is where the shade come in at. Now, we've got other people on the cast, like Richard, and we're going to have to get to Richard soon. We'll have to get to Richard soon. But there's people like Richard. There's people like Blake. There are people like Lynn and Tina and maybe like four other people. But baby, when we meet them, they don't put no name or nothing next to them. Like, the only people that we know their wealth are from the Hungs and from Deborah. So that's giving very much, you know, they might not be the elite of the elite of the elite. Now, also, let me give you some tea. One of my old coworkers that I used to work with, she knows that I love Bling Empire. And she had called me, I don't know, maybe like a year and a half ago. And she was like, do you know they're doing a Bling Empire NYC? I was like, girl, no. And she was like, yeah, one of her coworkers, well, really her boss. Okay, not her coworker, her boss. They had approached her to be on Bling Empire. But her boss was like, I'm a corporate woman. I don't really have time to get in, you know, I don't really want to be on reality TV. Because for some people that want to be on reality TV, like, you know, good for them. They can make a life out of that. But some people that actually have a life are successful. Like, you know, sometimes they don't want to really muddle with that. But my friend's boss was telling her that, you know, in New York City, she runs with a very, you know, affluent class of people. And, you know, a lot of her Asian friends, they were approached to do it. But like, they were saying that they didn't want any parts of it. And especially like her, again, I'm getting third hand information, but I'm just trying to tell you what my friend was saying. But essentially, her boss was telling her that the people in which she hung out with don't really like to flaunt their money, don't really like, you know, they didn't really want to be a part of anything like that. And so then after like they started filming and this and that, then I guess like her boss was telling her that, you know, they were approaching kind of sort of everyday people, which, you know, first of all, I think that that's great too. However, but when it's called Bling Empire and you got somebody on there, that family is worth $4 billion. And then you got, but anyway, so that's just a little bit of the tea, is that like the original Bling Empire over there in LA, they got the coins, and they just saying that some of the people in New York might not have the coins, but that's just a little tea that I got, but not that it matters. But if you remember on the regular Bling Empire, there is Anna, and you know, Anna and Christine don't necessarily get along. And so some of the things in Bling Empire kind of mimic themselves, where I would definitely say that Dorothy is probably the Christine and Deborah would be more of the Anna, where they just really don't like each other. But it took a while for me watching the show to kind of sort of warm up to Deborah, because she is very, what's the word that I want to say? Like, she say what comes to her mind, and she's very forward. And with that, sometimes when you're forward, people can assume that you are cold and don't have a heart. And that's, you know, kind of sort of for most of the show. That's what I got. But, you know, Deborah, I feel like I kind of sort of understood her. So Dorothy is supposed to be new to New York scene, and Deborah is this, you know, affluent woman, her husband, and you know, she's the, you know, the it girl. They were celebrating a birthday, and you know, they told the people to be here at like, you know, 7:30. Child Dorothy didn't get there till like 10 o'clock, and I guess like at some point they wanted to make a speech, and they're like, oh, we're gonna wait for Dorothy to get here. And Deborah was like, baby, this is our anniversary, we ain't waiting for nobody to get here. And so they kind of sort of moved on without it. And so basically, like, this ain't LA, this is New York. They just kind of sort of got off on the wrong foot, and they never really recovered. And then there is Kevin. Kevin is kind of, child, I'm calling him Kevin, Richard. Ooh, Richard like 6'3". Ooh, Richard. Ooh, if Richard wanted to be in the Zaddy calendar, Richard could. They kind of sort of model Richard like they model Kevin. But I feel like I like Kevin a little more than I like Richard. Now, mind you, I think I might be more attracted to Richard, because Richard is just a tall, fine man. Richard is fine. And Richard has this girlfriend, and I guess Richard and Dorothy have had a past. They kind of sort of make it seem as if it's going to be a thing, but not really. But Richard has this girlfriend, and essentially Richard is really, let's just say, they don't show Richard's net worth, okay? Let's just say everybody, even the people that they don't show their net worth, you can kind of see their homes and how they live. And Richard kind of has a regular apartment. His girlfriend is beautiful. She's really, really quiet. And they basically are saying that Richard is a people climber. And at first, I was team Richard, right? For a multitude of reasons, I was team Richard. And I really felt like, you know, what's wrong with a social climber? Like, you know, if you are truly friends with people that can help you, and like, you know, you pitch ideas and they can help you, then like, you know, but it got to be, and especially you guys can see, right? Richard works for like this company. I can't remember it, but we'll just call it like, we'll just say it's Green Grass. Supposed to be like a real health forward company, get acupuncture, you can get like different stuff for your wellness. Baby, every time Richard meets up with somebody or is going somewhere, baby, he always leaving out from green grass. Okay. Richard makes it a point to always be around green grass. He's doing this charity event for to raise awareness for a rare disease that his mother has. And so he's asking all of these people for help. And at first I'm like, well, what's wrong with that? Like, why y'all mad at your friend asking for help? And this one I was like, you know what? I ain't really feeling Dorothy because she's doing too much. However, if and when you continue to watch, you kind of do see that Kevin has a way about him. And I didn't really see it until Kevin's girlfriend, right? They were having a girls trip. And when you see Kevin, you see his girlfriend. If Kevin ain't Kevin not at green grass, you don't see the girlfriend. And so a lot of the other women in the group were essentially saying that, like, we don't know if we like her or not because Kevin is always around. I keep calling him Kevin. Richard is always around. So like they invited her on a girls trip and Richard felt some type of way about it and essentially was like, you shouldn't go. Now, mind you, he did get into a fight with some of the girls. He got into a fight with Dorothy and he got in a fight with Tina because he invited them to come to green grass because they said they couldn't sleep. And so they kind of sort of stood him up. And that's when I was feeling like, you know what? Dorothy and Tina are being real mean girl-ish until they showed us the text messages of the night before Kevin being like, this would be really good for my company. So if y'all could like, and okay, that's when I was like, all right, they might be right about Richard. And when the girlfriend was telling Richard that she wanted to go, Kevin essentially was like, they might be mean to you. I don't want you to go. I could be there to protect you. And she was like, baby, well, this ain't up for discussion. I'm going. Richard was like, oh, you stupid. Ooh, not stupid. So she went anyway, as she should. And then, okay, if y'all watch the show, it's this woman named Lynn who designs jewelry, beautiful jewelry. She's designed jewelry for Rihanna, all these different people. And she's built her company off of that. Her son is away at boarding school and her husband is like her manager, but he's in LA. But we get to see him. And all I am going to say is, Lynn's husband. If y'all don't want to watch Bling Empire NYC for anything else, please just watch the first three episodes and report back to me on what you think about Lynn's husband. Because I don't want to say nothing. Okay? I want everybody to live their life and be whoever it is that they want to be. I just have a couple of questions about Lynn's husband. And on their way to this girls' trip, Lynn is giving Richard's girlfriend advice because she's told them, like, what, you know, Richard essentially called her dumb for coming and all this stuff. And Lynn was like, oh, no, my husband would never talk to me like this, this and this, this and this and this and this. And I've been married for 20 years and my husband is this girl. I don't want no advice from you. And listen, if you are happy with your husband and your relationship work for y'all, that's fine. But as far as me and Richard, I don't want no advice from y'all. And then when, while they were on the girls' trip, because first of all, Lynn's husband, he wants to be a Slasian real bad, real bad. Okay. He's not Asian though. He's white, but let's just say he wants to be a Slasian and he's not, and he wants to be a part of the show. But you know, you are Lynn's husband. So you should stay in, you know, a husband's place. Like, even let's talk about what's her name? Deborah. Like, Deborah's husband, Stephen Hung. You know, he's on the show. He's clearly a cast member, but clearly, you know, Deborah is his wife who wants to be on this show. Okay. with Lynn and her husband. It's a little different. But anyway, while they're on a girls' trip, Lynn's husband and Richard meet up to shoot some scenes. They shoot one scene at a basketball court. And then Richard tells Lynn's husband that, you know, he's in a doghouse with his girlfriend because this and that. And Lynn's husband is like, let me take you somewhere where when I'm in the doghouse with Lynn, I take her. So, of course, the next day when they meet up, guess where they meet in front of? Okay, Richard's company, and not even his company, because Deborah told us, she's like, it's one thing if this, he been with this company, he started it up, he just worked there, he only been working there for the last 4 months. Ooh, okay. So that's when I started to be like, maybe Richard is a little opportunist. Anyway, so when Richard meets up with Lynn's husband, they outside of Greengrass, whatever the name is, company, and then they go to this store. I just need for y'all to watch, to see what store they go to, and I need for y'all to watch and tell me what you think about Lynn's husband. Now, here is what I will say that kind of sort of pissed me off about Bling Empire NYC. Two things, right? A couple of things. Now, when I was podcasting with Grace from RHAP about Vikings Valhalla, and if you know me, I love the Vikings. I love the original Vikings from the History Channel. Okay, Lagatha is my girl. And listen, Ragnar Lothbrok and his, you know, oldest son, Bjorn. Woo! Anyway, then they came out with the show Vikings Valhalla. And I was just so happy that we got season two because, and it came quickly. I was like, I don't even feel like that's been in a year. And Grace was telling me that with some of these Netflix shows, they'll get, and also a thing that I have not been happy with Netflix is with my Vikings, is that they only 8 episodes. I need more than 8. And so the reason why we got Vikings season 2 so quickly is because the season was approved for 16 episodes, right? And so what they are doing now is okay, they're like, okay, great, we got 16 episodes. We'll shoot 16 episodes. But listen, we will give you the first 8 as season 1, second 8 as season 2. And so I really believe that is what they do with Bling Empire, because the original Bling Empire on season 2, right? When season 2 ended, it was really frustrating for me because it was like a cliffhanger. And I was like, if season 3 picks up like in the same scene, then I'm gonna be over it. And guess what? Season 3 picked up right in the same scene. So then I realized after I talked with Grace, I was like, okay, that's what clearly they must be doing. They must be slated for like 24 episodes or something. And they just like, you know, chop it up. So anyway, this is one of my issues with Bling Empire NYC is that, going back to the original, I don't know why I just want to say Lynn's who. Band. Going back to the original Bling Empire third season, they ended it with Dorothy and Anna. Okay, you know, Anna is the grand dame of the original Bling Empire, and Anna is going to be in NYC, you know, Miss Anna was not in one episode of Bling Empire NYC season 1. Baby, Kane was practically in a whole episode. We saw Christine in an episode. I feel like Kevin might have even been mentioned. Like, first of all, they didn't even mention Anna, and we didn't see Anna. Don't play with my emotions, Netflix. I love Anna. She a little messy sometimes, but like, I love Anna's spirit. Like, why are y'all trying to get us to believe that she was on here and she's not? Unless she might be on season 2, because it's going to be a season 2. But that was like something that I didn't like that. I wanted to see Anna. And then I just, now this is just me being picky. I don't like how some of the episodes be like 32 minutes, 28 minutes, 41 minutes, 33 minutes, 42 minutes. Like, pick a time. Is it going to be 30 minutes or is it going to be a 40-minute show? Let me know. because I don't be liking it. But I love Bling Empire just as a franchise. I love the diversity. Okay, like how many times can we see the same, you know, Kardashians? How many times can we, like, you know, I love just seeing Slasians on the screen, okay? So if you have not watched Bling Empire, do yourself a favor, watch Bling Empire. It is such a easy, fun watch. You won't be disappointed. And listen, you definitely need to watch Bling Empire NYC, okay? So that y'all can see Lynn's husband. Because, ooh, listen, and again, I won't say nothing. Because, listen, live your best life. But I'm just trying, you know, the only reason why I have to say something is I feel like when Richard's girlfriend, now I can't remember her name, forgive me, a beautiful girl, beautiful gowns, beautiful girl. When she was giving her unsolicited, and the advice was kind of mean, I just felt like, baby, I don't know what you and your husband do. And then especially when her husband and Richard are at the store, like, baby, keep your advice for yourself. Okay? Keep it for yourself. All right. Now, this last show, I just want to tell y'all about. Y'all should watch it. It's really good. It's on Amazon Prime. And if you know me, I love Netflix. You know, Netflix is great. However, sometimes I feel like I spend more time scrolling through Netflix to find something. And then when I finally can land on something that I want to watch and I start playing and I'm laying in bed and I'm like, did I take a herbal supplement or is this woman talking, but her mouth and the words, they like, listen. For some shows, I don't mind a dub over, but I really feel like Netflix needs to let us know. They just need to put in a whole section, dub over movies, because I hate when it be like the number one movie. Like, ooh, let me watch it. And then it's a dub over. And it's a bad dub over. I can do some dub overs. Listen, I'd rather y'all just write, keep it in the language. And I'd rather y'all write the words out. Give me the closed caption, because when it's a good show like Narcos, Mexico, like I will read the subtitles. Like, hey, I won't even know that I'm reading the subtitles. That's how good it is. But I just hate a dub over. Anyway, so Netflix ain't really been doing it for me like that in the movie department. But I love my friends, Chelsea and Sarah. They hate the fact that it's more so Sarah, that I love a good Amazon or Hulu original. Now, they do them like blockbuster ones that are actually like movies, but a good Amazon or a good Hulu, like, you know, maybe $20,000 budget film where it's like, it's got the meat and potatoes, but it don't have the budget, like, and it's kind of quirky, weird, like, I don't know, dry humor sometimes. I just live for them. I am obsessed, so I'm always kind of, like, trying to find new movies or shows like that. But The Summer I Turned Pretty is on Amazon Prime. It came out in 2022. Again, something else about me, I love for like preteen high school drama-y shows. Even though it be like preteen and drama-y shows, like it don't really be for the preteen. Like, you know, Euphoria, you think of Twilight, Emily in Paris, Bridgerton, you know, just, I don't know. I just love those type of teeny drama-esque movies. They speak to my soul. Now, my friend was telling me to watch The Summer I Turned Pretty for a while, but I have a whole note in my phone of movies and shows that people tell me to watch. And so I have to like get around to when I get around to it. However, the show sucked me in. It's about this girl named Bella. She's got an older brother and her mother, and every summer they go to this shore house with her mom's best friend, and her mom's best friend has two sons, and they're all raised like cousins, and Bella is the youngest. The brother, her brother and the two other brothers from her best friend. They're, you know, like brothers. They're growing up and normally their dads have to work. So the summers are really like the kids with their mom, and Bella's been going since she's little. But this is the summer that she turned pretty. And there's just a lot to it. Now, it's kind of weird because these her mom's best friend's children who have been raised like her brothers or her cousins, she's always had a crush on the older one. And this is the summer that Bella kind of sort of like, you know, blossoms. And so it's just a love triangle between Bella. Then it's this other guy that she meet that I felt like she did him dirty because she was just so in love with the one brother. Then it's this other brother who, what I liked about the character, but I didn't like about the character was, so first, let me just tell you. So it's Bella. Her brother is named Steven. Her mom is named Laurel. Okay. Now, Laurel's best friend is Susanna. Susanna's kids are Jeremy and Conrad. Jeremy is the youngest brother. Conrad is the oldest brother. Steven is around the same age as Jeremiah. And so they're all like, you know, they grew up 3, 4, 5 years old. Now, this is the summer that Bella kind of sort of turns pretty. And she's had a crush always on Conrad. But Conrad throughout this series is mean. It seems like, you know, he used to play football, but he's not playing football, and they can't figure out what's going on with Conrad. Now, mind you, I don't really want to tell y'all a lot because it sounds kind of silly, but then when you start to get into the stuff, like, I gagged. Like, I was like, oh my God, wait. Okay, I ain't gonna lie. I did cry a little bit towards the end, but it's really good. So, Susanna always wanted a girl, but she got Jeremiah and Conrad. And she looks at Bella like, you know, it's her own daughter. And so, you know, they do a debutante. And so Susanna really wants Bella to get into the debutantes. And Laurel, Bella's mom, don't really want her to get into it because she just feels like that is dated. Like, we don't, you know, Laurel as an Asian woman just feels like it's, you know, like it, she really feels like it's like a white woman's thing and she don't really want to have Bella. So she don't really want her to be in that. Bella really loves Conrad, but then kind of sort of she meets this guy named Cam, and we love Cam. And if you watch the summer that I turned pretty, I really feel like there needs to be justice for Cam. Okay. Listen, if I was, cause I think Bella turning, I think she turned 15. If I could go back 4 years and be 15 again, I would be looking for a Cam. But so the one thing that I found problematic, or not even problematic, right, is that, like, one, I didn't really feel like there was a lot of LGBTQ plus representation. There was, like, you know, we had a lead black female. Her name was Nicole. She was Conrad's kind of sort of girlfriend. Then she became Bella's big sister in the debutantes. But we didn't really have, like, any LGBTQ plus representation. However, the brother Jeremiah, you know, cute little 16-year-old. I did like the fact that Jeremiah seemed to be fluid. Like, Jeremiah was a flirt and that was like his thing. He kind of sort of like flirted with everyone and like he would even like kiss boys. And I loved that. But then I just felt like it kind of took a turn and all of a sudden he just became so into Belly too. And so that I just felt like that was a little weird. But let me just tell y'all, if y'all like that kind of like wholesome but still drama-esque show, it gets really good, especially with Susanna, especially with when we find out why Conrad has been so mad. We find out a little bit more about Laurel and what her situation. Like, it's just a really good show. And season 2 is coming out. So if y'all watch it, let me know, because I really do want to cover maybe season 2 a little bit more in depth. But The Summer I Turned Pretty was definitely one that I was like putting off. It's kind of like a rainy, snowy, cold. We get a snow day. You got a little time, boom, because I definitely watched the whole series. I don't know why sometimes I be feeling guilt admitting my binges. I definitely watched this whole series, started it on a Friday night, watched a couple episodes, went to sleep, and then all day Saturday, I ended up just finishing it. So I just feel like we have a snow day. Hopefully we don't. But if a snow day comes up or just a rainy day when you're in the house, it's definitely just one of those type of, I connected with it. And if you kind of sort of connect with that, like, you know, teenage, I feel like you would like it. And again, sometimes I wonder, like, why am I so connected to this teenage drama-ish? Because I feel like I would have had those type of dramas in my life at that point in time. Because I feel like, you know, I don't know, me and my teenager, I was just so scared of, like, living or being. I feel like at times, sometimes I feel like I got robbed of being a teenager in my teenage life because, like, I just was not comfortable with who I was. So, like, I didn't really get schmangled dangled and all of this, like, ooh, teenage drama. So I have a connection to it. But it's been such a long time, Posse, since we've had a talk like this. Please let me know if you've enjoyed this and you want your baby boy to kind of, like, give you more of this, because I do really feel like it's been a while. I feel like we used to talk Love After Lockup, and that's another thing. Let me talk about that first of all, okay? Because I still watch Love After Lockup, but I feel like, you know, I was like, maybe, you know, the posse ain't connected to Love After Lockup. So I'll just, you know, continue to enjoy it. But now it seems that, like, this season of Love After Lockup, baby, everyone and their mom is talking about it. I'm like, baby boy should have stayed down and committed and still been giving it out. But listen, let me know if you missed our chats, because if you did, then listen, I promise I will bring you more. But listen, this has been my Bryce take on some of the things that I just felt like, you know, if you haven't seen, y'all definitely should take a look. And if you got some recommendations of things that I need to watch, let me know. And they don't have to be the popular stuff. I like stuff that's not popular. And I am watching The Last of Us, okay? And that episode that they dropped on Friday, now, y'all know I love the Frank episode, okay? I didn't expect that. You know, a lot of feedback and criticism on the Frank episode, but I enjoyed the Frank episode. But, baby, this episode by far was the best episode. That ending, baby, if you weren't shedding a tear, then you must have been Lynn's husband, because, baby, it was good. And then when they came up from the ground and then they morphed and they, oof, listen, I am enjoying Last of Us. But let me know what you guys are watching. And yeah, I'll talk with you real soon.
It is time for advice given to you by Bryce. It's time for advice with Bryce.
Hi, Bryce. I hope this message finds you well. My name is Terrell, and I am writing to you for some advice. I am a gay man of color in my late to early 20s and mid-30s. I have been a fan of the Purple Pants podcast since its inception. As Valentine's Day is approaching, I've realized that I have never been in a relationship in my adult life. As a gay man of color, I understand that dating can come with its own set of unique challenges. Having never been in a relationship, I struggle with feelings of insecurity and low self-esteem. It can be difficult to know if this is normal at my age, and these feelings are only heightened by the approaching Valentine's Day. Many of my high school and college friends are in long-term relationships and starting families, which only adds to my sense of loneliness. I would be grateful for any advice or perspective you can offer on this subject. I know that you have touched on the subject of being a POC dating in the LGBTQ+ community before, and I value your opinion. I am eager to hear your thoughts, and thank you for all that you do for the communities that you serve. I look forward to meeting you at your Atlanta event in April. Many thanks, Terrell.
Thank you, Chelsea, for reading our advice with Bryce this week. And baby boy, Terrell, thank you so much for this submission. But I just have to ask you, are you me? Am I you? Are we the same person? Because reading that email from you really resonated with me. And I've been sitting with it. You sent it in about a week and a half ago. And I have to say, Terrell, you really caused me to reflect on a lot of different things because I relate to you in a lot of what you are saying. I struggle because I have been in some relationships, clearly not any lasting relationships and, dare I say, healthy relationships. And so I think, and just touching upon that, that you said that you've never been in a relationship, I think, and I can only speak for me being a gay Black man, and I would imagine that other queer men of color, I think that for me, what I have noticed is I've never had any real role models or representation growing up of what a queer Black relationship looks like. And so I think that if you don't know what it looks like, how can you know what you want? And you're right. Dating in the LGBTQ plus community, especially for gay men, can be hard. There are so many nuances. It's, you know, top, bottom, like, you know, all of that. And it does matter. You know, compatibility does matter. And I find my struggle with that is, for me, it's like, of course, in dating, it is a necessary thing, but I just find that we put ourselves into these boxes and, like, you know, you put yourself into this box and then it's like, then you bumping up against other boxes and wondering why you can't figure out why you can't find, because we're just so hard in labeling. It's like, nope, can't. And it's, you know, it's draining. Draining. One of my issues is that, like, you know, I think that for gay men, it's important to know, are you sexually compatible with this person? I find that I struggle with, when is an appropriate time when you're dating someone to have that conversation? And for the longest time, as I was, you know, exploring myself growing up, I felt as though if anyone brought that topic up too soon, I'll be like, nope, done, over with, goodbye, don't want to see you anymore. But the older I get, I find that, you know, it is important to know. But I feel like it's how you bring it up. And I also feel like it doesn't really matter whatever you want to describe yourself as, top, bottom, verse, whatever it is. I feel like labeling ourselves those things, and especially in this community, as other queer men will know, is that it really then limits the pool of which that you, who and what that you can date. But the older I get, Terrell, the more I am realizing that if we are seeking love, right, then we should seek love. And I don't care what you are. If I love you, I'm going to love you, and we're going to figure out a way. Right? Again, but no one has ever taught us that. You know, we just kind of sort of have had to figure it out on our own. So I definitely agree with you with the nuances in our dating community. The advice that I would have for you is that take the person that you meet at face value. You know, get to know that person. And again, it shouldn't be a sexual relationship right away. Although, listen, I'm saying it happens, and, like, you know, but I just really feel like if you love someone and you find something, like, you can make it work. You know what I'm saying? Like, you can make it work. But again, labeling ourselves this somebody, you trust in this community, like, you know, oh, he a verse bottom. Oh, no, he a verse top. No, oh, I don't want to verse. Oh, I don't like. Listen, your soulmate. Like, but again, it is like us labeling ourselves these things and putting ourselves in these boxes, trying to really fit into, like, a heteronormal relationship. And it's like, I think the one thing that I have learned as a gay Black man is that I don't want to base the standards of my relationships off of, you know, a heterosexual relationship. We are not the same. We are different. The way we move, the way we operate, the way we communicate, the, you know, our love languages. And I think that a part of us putting ourselves in these boxes kind of fits in that heteronormal society, and which is why it's flawed from the get-go. So that's kind of sort of my take on that. As far as Valentine's being triggering, I too feel like it's triggering for me as well. And younger me would allow that day to upset me, right? And I'm a person that I like to feel my emotions. So if I'm sad, I want to feel sad. You know me, I love to listen to sad music at Christmas time in a bed. Like, you know, I like for things to invoke emotion. But I had this realization not that long ago that, yeah, I like to feel emotion. And sometimes I tend to go with sadder songs, because those are the songs that maybe I can relate to and they do invoke emotion. So it's like kind of sort of what I'm used to, right? So I still allow myself to listen to my sad jams. However, I also kind of sort of started listening to other sets of music. And it's like, you know, maybe I should be programming myself a little bit differently. So instead of maybe on Valentine's Day that I'm listening to these love, you broke my heart, why don't I find some music that I listen to that is like hopeful, optimistic, and that can put you in a different space? Because the reality of it is that our words and feelings have power. And if we continue to kind of like beat ourselves down and say like, oh, I'm lonely and sad, then the reality is your behavior is going to show lonely and sad. And I too, like you, used to get upset and be like, oh, I'm so lonely. Why? But I have, you know, I'm on a road to a better Bryce, and I've really been working on kind of like putting that energy. And I know it sounds cliche, but like, putting it into like loving myself, putting into myself, because we get into this space, Terrell, where it's like we do so much for others, right? We do so much for these other relationships. We do so much for, you know, our friends, and, you know, our friends go on and they get in long-term relationships. They're having children. They're getting married. Their life kind of sort of changes. And then it's like, you're still there. And the life that, like, so I really just kind of started like putting things into myself and doing the things that I really wanted to do, taking myself on solo trips by myself. Now, this might sound corny, but reorganizing my closet. You know, I've tried to get back into running. I used to love running, but then I kind of sort of like my life got a little hectic and I kind of sort of fell out of it. And not that I couldn't make the time for it, but I just didn't, because I wasn't making myself a priority. I was making other things priorities. And so I think that, you know, when you get those emotions from days like Valentine's Day, you should maybe use that emotion to recenter yourself, to putting focus back on you. And I was having this conversation with my sister the other day where we was happy to be talking about, you know, she was asking me if I was still talking to somebody. And I was like, no, da, da, da. And, you know, we left off with like, you know, people find the time for the things that they want to find time for. You ever be like somebody like, oh, I'm so busy, I can't call you back. But if you wanted to call me back, you could, because you could make time. I think we need to hold ourselves to that same standard, Terrell, that there is time to be made if we make it. And I think it's important to make ourselves a priority. And I think when you make yourself a priority, when you truly love on yourself, and when you really kind of put back into yourself, I think that that will resonate. And I am too, again, I'm speaking from experience and also speaking from a place of like, I am walking this walk with you. And there used to be a point in time in my life, and I'm still working on this because I'm a work in progress, where I used to be kind of sort of like drawn to people that were like unavailable. And, you know, people that like, you know, I just knew weren't good for me, or knew that it wouldn't, you know, it wouldn't go anywhere. And I really had to kind of take a look at myself. And I don't really want to get too deep up on here, Purple Pants Podcast, but this is a safe space. And so I will get a little deep. Because I've wanted to know that, like, it seems like the men that I have dated, or, you know, the men that I have encountered with, they all seem to be the same person, you know? And so in therapy, you know, working with my therapist, we work through, she asks me difficult questions, and sometimes it's like I just can't answer it, or sometimes I just don't want to answer it. But, you know, one of the breakthroughs that I had a realization with was, she had asked me why, like, you know, because there's a pattern of like men that are unavailable, whether like they're just not comfortable with their sexuality, or like just dating men that like I know ultimately don't want the same goals that I want. But why do I still put forth effort, really was the question. And we kind of sort of had this breakthrough that, you know, maybe the unavailableness comes from. And then she, of course, you know, asked me about like my relationship with my father. And I was one of them people that like you hear all the time that like, you know, everyone's either got like mommy issues or daddy issues, and it kind of like, you know, will show up in your relationships. But I was just like, well, I don't think that that's true. Like, I was one of those people, right? But then in this conversation with my therapist, she asked me about my relationship with my dad. And, you know, my dad is deceased. You know, my mom and dad were married, but when I was a young child, they got a divorce. And, you know, my dad kind of sort of went on to live his own life, really never that far away. My older brothers had a relationship with him. I didn't necessarily, like, I had a relationship with him, but it was the like, we only had a relationship. Ooh, child, y'all about to read me. Okay, right. So, first of all, Terrell, not you getting me emotional, and this is supposed to be advice with Bryce, but so I had a relationship with my dad. It wasn't like we didn't have a relationship, but it seemed as though in that relationship, we only had a relationship because I was the one reaching out. I was the one fostering that relationship. And it wasn't like my dad was like, you know, it wasn't like, I mean, was he an active dad? No. Did my dad love me? I know that he loved me. I don't know how or why we got on the subject. Like, let me just take a breath. So like, I know that my dad loved me, but I don't know that he loved me, if that makes sense. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I know he loved me, but I don't know. The only way that I can explain it is that, like, I know my mom loves me. Like, you know, I have a relationship with her. I don't know. I just like, so, and speaking with my therapist, and she was just like, did you hear what you just said? And I was just like, girl, no, you know? And she was like, does that sound at all familiar? And I just was like, hey, girl, get out of my face. But it does, because it's like, you know, the only reason that, like, in my opinion of the situation, because I'm sure if my dad were here, he would maybe have another side. But my side of it, or my truth, is that, like, you know, when I would get home from school, I would call everybody. I would call my mom. I would call my sister. I would call people from school. And I would, like, call my dad. Like, I was the one that initiated reach. Like, I was the one that made that, like, that connection. And so as it turns out, like, you know, in life, you know, you learn and model things from your parents. And if, like, you know, if your mother is supposed to be the first woman that you love, your dad is supposed to be the first man that you love. And if I happen to like men, and the first man that I am supposed to have loved and have shown me love, I feel like, and in this podcast, I'm like, I can't say for certain that I know my dad loved me, although I knew he loved me. How do you expect for that to turn out in your relationships today? And so I just, because I don't really want to keep going more deeper because it's getting me a little emotional, but excuse me. But like, I just say that to say to you, Terrell, sometimes we have to do that work. Sometimes we have to kind of answer those questions. And again, I feel like as gay black men or gay men of color, like, we don't have those role models of gay men, you know, in the 2000s and the 90s of black, you know, like, so we're figuring it out. But also we are harboring trauma, and we're like, we're bringing trauma along with us. And if we don't address it, the same thing is going to continue to happen. And I think that, again, like I said before, when you put the time and you put yourself, you make yourself a priority, and you work on your physical health, you work on your mental health, you work on just like truly loving yourself. And, you know, of course, not focusing on, ooh, let me find a man, or focus on giving your attention to the first man that, you know, shows you attention. But focus on yourself, but keeping yourself open. And that's another thing, is that we've got to find the balance of, like, not searching, but, you know, being available, that if something were to come your way, that you could receive it. And there's a difference from being available than searching and looking, because if you are putting the time into, like, you know, yourself and your hobbies and your friendships and making, like, sure that you're good, but still being open, I think that the right person will come. I also think, and this is my last thing that I will, my last piece of advice to you, is that, again, at times I think we are on this heteronormal timeline that you're in high school, you have your high school sweetheart, you get married, or like, you know, right out of college, you meet, like, you know, and maybe that might be true for some. But, you know, for me as a gay black man, I'm in my 30s at this point, and I'm just kind of figuring out my ish. So it's like, would I even have wanted to be in a relationship with somebody before I even got to this point? Because more than likely, it probably wouldn't have been healthy, because, like, you know what I'm saying? So I think that sometimes we want things because we see society having them, although it might not be right for us. I think that when we get to a place, it will come. It will. And that's what I believe. And that's what I'm going to put out there, because I don't want to continue the pattern of me being like, I'm not worthy. I don't deserve it. We have to speak life into our life and upon our life. And so I feel like working on yourself, being honest with yourself, working through your traumas, whatever it is, and speaking positively upon your life and speaking what you want into your life, speaking the type of man that you want, knowing how you want to be loved. And really putting that out into the universe and being a good person. I think that those type of things really matter. And I think, you know, having other queer people that you can talk to that, you know, are going through the same thing that you're going through, being honest with your friend circle. I think that all of those things matter. But I think most importantly, it's to love yourself. Put yourself first. Make time for yourself. Heal yourself. Is the advice that I have. And I truly thank you so much, Terrell, for writing in. And I feel like, you know, this advice I'm giving to you, but really I feel like this advice was for myself, and I'm sure many other people could chime in. But no, greatly, I appreciate you writing in. And please, if and when you hear this, please, I would love to know your thoughts on this conversation, and we can even talk more. But thank you so much for your submission. I truly appreciate it.
And once again, if you feel like you need advice with Bryce, please do not hesitate to reach out to the Purple Pants Podcast. You can contact Bryce at purplepantspodcast@gmail.com.
Who's the freak of the week? Who's that? Who's that freaky freak? Who's the freak of the week? Might be me, might be you, might be.
And we are on to this week's Freak of the Week. With it being Black History Month, you know I love to give you some Black historical figures that are really important to me. I always say Black history is American history. And in that same vein, it is really important for me to celebrate queer Black historical figures, because gay Black history is Black history, and Black history is American history. Okay, just so y'all know. And again, also following off of this week's advice with Bryce, that really got me like in my feelings and emotional. And I was just so happy to hear from Terrell and to just write something that really resonated with me. I talked about like representation. I think that it's really important to see yourself in other places and to know that you're not alone. And so this week's Freak of the Week is an amazing writer, which is also so crazy to me. Growing up, my mom used to have this writer in our home, and I remember used to seeing this author, and I just didn't think anything of it. And it wasn't until later in my, I would say, college life that I realized that the author was a queer Black man. And so again, just the importance of it. And so this week's Freak of the Week is the writer Lynn Harris. I'm not sure if you've ever heard of any of his books, but listen, you might want to get you some. His name is Everett Lynn Harris. He was an openly gay American author who was best known for his depictions of African-American men who were on the down low and in the closet. Many of the emotional struggles his characters experienced mirrored his own history of struggling with his sexual orientation. He wrote a dozen of books, 10 of which reached the New York Times bestsellers list, including If This World Were Mine, A Love of My Own, and Any Way the Wind Blows. He also penned a memoir, What Becomes of the Brokenhearted, which chronicalizes his rise to fame and his struggles, including his suicide attempt in August 1990. Harris was among the most successful African-American or gay authors of his time. And we appreciate and salute Lynn Harris. I just think that it's important for us to just show our appreciation. And here's a little known fact. When I was on Survivor and we were out at Ponderosa and we were like quarantined in the Philippines before we were getting ready to film, one of the books that I read during the week long of us just sitting under like a pergola and not being able to talk was Lynn Harris's What Becomes of a Brokenhearted. So, you know, little Survivor fun fact. But yes, and I just crazy to know that his characters in his book, which were about like, you know, brown, black and brown people dealing with men that are not ready to accept themselves. It's like the story of my life. But again, just him in the early 90s and 2000s writing about this. And again, like just what I'm just saying, representation matters. And so I just want to salute. And Lynn Harris is our freak of the week. If Lynn Harris is the freak of the week, that means we are coming to a close of another amazing episode. I truly appreciate all of your support, always tuning in, always listening. If you have not already, please ensure that you are subscribed to the Purple Pants Podcast. We are available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, wherever it is that you can find podcasts. The Purple Pants Podcast awaits for you to subscribe, write a review, and give your baby boy some 5 stars. And don't forget to tell a friend, to tell a friend, to tell a friend that it's Lynn's Husband. Cause it's a.
It's the Purple Pants. It's the Purple Pants. It's the Purple Pants Podcast. You better get your headphones and listen up quick. Ooh. It's the Purple Pants Podcast. You better listen in public. Might make your stomach hurt. Ooh. It's the Purple Pants Podcast. You're trying to unwind. You better get that box wine. It's the Purple Pants Podcast. You're trying to get your snack. You better hurry right back, though. It's the Purple Pants. It's the Purple Pants.